Good morning at 8:03. This is Seattle's Morning News with Dave Ross. I'm Colleen O'Brien. This hour of Seattle's Morning News is brought to you by Wilcox Family Farms. Let's get straight to the news. At least 27 migrants bound for Britain died when their boat sank in the English Channel in what France's interior minister is calling the biggest tragedy involving migrants on the dangerous crossing to date. Here's CBS's Charlie Daggett.
A joint French and British search and rescue mission was launched, but for many, it was too late.
My thoughts and sympathies are, first of all, with the victims and their families. It's an appalling thing. But I also want to say that this disaster underscores how dangerous it is to cross the channel in this way.
Despite that danger, more than 25,000 migrants have made the crossing this year, including more arriving in Britain today.
The Regional Maritime Authority, which oversees rescue operations, said 27 bodies were found. Two people survived. Four others are still missing, but presumed drowned. President Biden is responding to the guilty verdicts in the killing of Ahmaud Arbery, reports CBS's Steve Dorsey from Washington.
The president said in a statement released by the White House while he prepares to celebrate Thanksgiving in Nantucket that the guilty verdicts reflect our justice system doing its job. However, Mr. Biden said his administration will continue to work to ensure equal justice under law isn't just a platitude.
Mr. Biden also said the country should work towards building a future of unity. And former Pierce County Prosecutor Mark Lindquist had something to say about this verdict. He told Cairo Radio he's not surprised.
Here's the thing. I think juries get it right about 99% of the time. And I think they did here.
Murder cases have different names in Georgia. Travis McMichael was convicted of malice murder. Lindquist says that's the equivalent of first-degree murder in our state. Gregory McMichael and William Bryant were convicted of what amounts to second- and third-degree murder charges. A global survey of human diets has found that almost half of the people on Earth have either been underfed or overfed. CBS's Matt Piper has more on that.
The 2021 Global Nutrition Report, an independent survey conducted annually since 2013, estimates that about half of the global population is either underweight, overweight, or obese. The data show that a quarter of all deaths among adults are attributable to poor diet. Eating habits are doing tremendous damage to the environment as well, according to the report. Food production currently generates more than a third of all greenhouse gas emissions globally, and meat-heavy diets are responsible for the lion's share of those emissions. Matt Piper, CBS News.
Today, of all days, we're thinking about those in need. And needing to be fed. Breakfast, lunch, and the all-important Thanksgiving dinner will be served today at the Tacoma Rescue Mission. Cairo 7 TV's Lauren Donovan is there.
The mission has served Tacoma and Pierce County since 1915, and it's open 365 days a year. About 40 women and about 30 men take refuge here. And organizers tell me the pandemic has affected the homeless community like it has many of us, but there has been a notable increase in need since March of 2020. Now, recently, the mission has had to utilize an overflow building, and every night they've got to bus people to a separate site so they can receive the services they need. And I know they're good on volunteers for today. A lot of people have already signed up to help. But if you're interested in helping, working with them moving forward, you can do that by going to their website and signing up.
And here's something nice. Anyone impacted by recent flooding is invited to the Smokestack Diner in Everson for a free Thanksgiving dinner. That's up in Whatcom County. It's open from 1 to 5 today. There will also be forms there for flood victims to fill out to apply for anything they need to get by. The Red Cross will also be handing out supplies. President Biden and First Lady Jill Biden released a pre-recorded Thanksgiving greeting this morning. Both are observing the holiday in Nantucket. President Biden said those who have suffered personal loss this year will not be forgotten.
As we give thanks for what we have, we also keep in our hearts those who we lost and those who have lost so much, and those who have an empty seat at their kitchen table or their dining room table this year because of this virus or another cruel twist of fate or accident. We pray for them.
Crowds return to the streets of the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And with that, the return of parade goers comes an increase in security. CBS's Elise Preston is along the parade route this morning.
You guys are good. Close it up.
The balloons are ready to take flight as spectators flock back to the streets of New York City to watch the 95th annual Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And with returning crowds will come increased security.
This parade typically has 2 to 3 million people that align the 47-block parade route. That's what makes this such a giant security concern.
James Galliano is a CBS News security and law enforcement analyst.
What kind of preparations go into making sure that this stays safe for the families here and for people watching at home?
So we look at this from three perspectives: deterrence, intelligence, and response.
Among the deterrents will be officers on rooftops and thousands patrolling on foot, including counterterrorism teams.
You're going to see hundreds of cement blocks, sand trucks, blocker vehicles. You'll see our explosive detection canines.
Dozens of streets near the parade have been closed and 300 extra cameras deployed along the route. Law enforcement is on high alert after an SUV drove through a crowd at a Christmas parade in Waukesha, Wisconsin, earlier this week. But Galliano says he suspects, with so much security, this event will be one of the safest places to be.
We're looking at the balloons.
Isabel Kim and her mom, Julie, watched the balloons get inflated Wednesday afternoon.
As her mom, how does that feel to be able to share this moment with your daughter?
Oh, it's great. It feels a lot more like the holidays here.
Julie told us she's always concerned about safety at big events, but they plan to attend the parade anyway.
As a country, we need to come together and demonstrate, you know, the holiday spirit and that everybody can be together and be safe.
And New York City's Mayor Bill de Blasio said yesterday there is no known credible threat. As for COVID, vaccination requirements are not allowed along this parade route, but the city is asking everyone to wear a mask.
If you're also itching to get back to normal this holiday season, in Bellevue, many of the traditions canceled last year due to COVID are back. Cairo Radio's Nicole Jennings brings the good cheer.
Returning events include the nightly Snowflake Lane performances, Garden Delights at the Bellevue Botanical Garden, and the ice rink at Bellevue's downtown park.
It's a great opportunity for families. It makes for a wonderful date night. You can take in Snowflake Lane and go skating and then go to Garden Delights and you get a little bit of everything.
Bellevue Downtown Association President Patrick Bannon does caution people that there are still some COVID restrictions in place, like limited capacity. That means you'll want to make sure that you buy tickets to events ahead of time.
And indoor events or performances will require vaccination or testing proof, as is mandated by King County. Olympia is kicking off their holiday festivities on Sunday. The Love Ole Winterfest is from noon to 6 on 5th and Washington. There will be live music, horse-drawn carriage rides, craft beer and cider. But this kicks off a whole month of festivities down there. Now, many people have their eyes on the best Black Friday deals as the holiday shopping season ramps up. Supply chain issues continue to threaten gifts being delivered on time, though. CNET's Ian Scher has some suggestions on how to navigate this shopping season.
Buying American-made products. I know it's not what you might have been after, but there are a lot of really good American-made products that we list out on CNET that do not have as many supply problems. So that's one thing you can go after. The other thing we're hearing a lot about is that people are using this opportunity to kind of reset what they kind of see as a gift in their family. So, for example, doing a experience gift, right? Maybe a really good meal out, or maybe going on a tour downtown or whatever else. Those types of things are becoming popular too.
Ian also wants to warn that there's been an uptick in gift card scams too. A reminder, you should never give your gift card number to anyone over the phone.
A lot of these scammers will pretend they're from the FBI or the IRS. They might say that they have hacked into your computer or even offer to fix your printer and then charge you a crazy amount of money in gift cards.
Cher says if someone does trick you out of getting your card number, you won't have any legal recourse to getting your money back. So just say no to those scam calls. It is 8:12, Cairo 7. Meteorologist Nick Allard has your forecast.
Looking at some increasing rain. It'll become breezy and area-wide very wet this afternoon. I mean, yes, we already have some pockets of light rain now, but it only gets heavier and heavier as the day goes on. Any wintry mix we see over the Cascades now, the passes will mainly turn to rain. rain as snow levels rise and highs will be in the low 50s. Very windy north of Everett. The rest of us is kind of breezy. I think you can see upwards of half an inch to an inch across a lot of the Puget Sound area, more at the coast, a lot more, and also closer to Whatcom County. Tomorrow, I think we're going to see rain in the morning, then decreasing showers as the day goes on, although you are going to keep some convergent zone showers going. Could still see some for the Apple Cup, but I don't see much. And then into Saturday, rain picks back up and sticks around through Sunday. Monday's kind of showery. Then another round of rain comes in later Tuesday into Wednesday.
Thank you so much, Nick. Right now, 44 outside the Carter Subaru studio.
Be fully prepared for your day. Every day, this is Seattle's Morning News with Dave Ross.
Seattle's Morning News, Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. There are a lot of myths around Thanksgiving. Some people think that it's celebrating the suppression of Native Americans, so let's find out. Matthew Dennis is a professor emeritus of environmental studies and history at the University of Oregon and is also a scholar on colonial America. So this would be a perfect question for you. Does our vision of it need to be revised?
Even though we do, in fact, have a long history of colonialism, Thanksgiving itself doesn't celebrate that colonial act of invasion and conquest. The so-called Pilgrims did have a holiday called Landing Day, which they celebrated on December 22nd, you know, at least by the late 18th century, which marked the time when they supposedly stepped off onto Plymouth Rock and, you know, took possession of that land. That was a really different holiday. Thanksgiving celebrates 1621, not 1620 when they landed. And it was all about generosity, reciprocity, really trying to build relationship with Native people around them and vice versa. There were more Native people at the first Thanksgiving than there were white colonists. And, you know, both sides contributed to the pot. And the idea was really to build bridges, build understanding as a way of going forward in a kind of unified or at least peaceful way. That's the myth. It's actually based on a historical event. Thanksgiving itself, to the extent that it's about that moment, I think is actually a time when the myth and the history come together in a way that's fairly positive. You know, it's in a way, it's a kind of a multicultural holiday. You know, we talk about ourselves as a nation of immigrants. It really even can accommodate and has accommodated those people who were the original Americans, not immigrants at all.
So how do we celebrate Thanksgiving in a way that you're describing then? Because I think that it's been taken over by gorging and consumerism.
You know, it's actually about as insulated from commerce as any holiday. I mean, the thing about it is it's kind of paradoxical. It's a national holiday, but it's celebrated locally. In fact, in homes, it's not a gift-giving holiday. It's a time when people welcome people into their homes, and sure, they overindulge, but not in a way that's commercial. You know, it's gorging on food that they produce themselves and share with each other.
How do you explain the bleeding of Black Friday into Thanksgiving, where the deals are starting at 6 p.m. when we should be sitting down with family and giving thanks and reflecting?
I think that actually, you know, many Americans resent that. Commerce is a way of life. It's actually, you know, part of the environment we live in. It's the way we celebrate, often by buying. But one of the things that people actually like about Thanksgiving, and many people think of it as America's most beloved holiday, is that it's actually not Christmas and it's not commerce. It's a kind of haven in our calendar against those kind of forces that, of course, are very powerful and encroach all the time. So I'm not, you know, trying to say that that doesn't happen, but it's one of the possibilities that Thanksgiving provides.
Why turkey?
Well, probably the short answer is that it's a native bird, and it was a kind of focus of promotion by the poultry industry late in the 19th century. The traditional harvest home feast item would be a goose. At the first Thanksgiving, it was probably more venison than anything else. But turkeys are, you know, kind of a substantial bird. It's something that turkey growers promoted in the late 19th century and into the 20th century. And, it really took a special occasion. It's, you know, it's bigger than a chicken. It's more special.
Now, when was it actually declared a national holiday?
The biggest promoter of it was a woman named Sarah Josepha Hale, a literary figure and especially a publisher of a very prominent ladies' magazine in the early 19th century. So beginning in the 1820s and 30s and through the Civil War, she would write each year all the governors and the president saying you should proclaim a Thanksgiving. And so it kind of spread out from New England with the migration of population to the south and to the west. And so it really spread, but wasn't officially a holiday in the United States until 1863.
But that was the darkest days of the Civil War. What was the background to making it official during that period especially?
It had been celebrated both north and south. And during the Civil War, I mean, this was a gesture that is very Lincoln-esque. It was all about trying to unify the country, find something to be happy about, something to give thanks for, and to express some hope. And so it was seen as a way of, you know, binding the nation's wounds, to steal a line from Lincoln's second inaugural, and try to move forward in unity. And, you know, 1863 was a little early, but that would continue to have that function in the post-Civil War era.
Well, then it's perfect today, isn't it? When the nation is similarly divided.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think so. I mean, the possibility to move beyond the fragmentation and the division and the chaos that we hear about, you know, exists, you know, locally, where you can do something that is a national holiday, that's part of tradition, and yet it gives you the space, because it's in your own house with your own friends, to do it in your own way and try to think about the best rather than the worst of your experience and maybe the national experience.
Matthew Dennis, a professor emeritus of history, University of Oregon. Matthew, thank you very much.
Nice to talk with you. Happy Thanksgiving. Hey, oh,
let's go. You know what that means. It's 8:19, time for Choke Points, brought to you by Primary Residential Mortgage. Work is finally underway to repair the closed West Seattle Bridge. And Sully was able to get a tour inside the cracking concrete structure recently. This is what he saw.
It was just nice to get out on the bridge for the first time since March 23rd of last year. Being 140 feet above the Duwamish River on a sunny afternoon was beautiful. 360-degree views of the city, Puget Sound, and Mount Rainier was stunning. I'd forgotten just how special that view can be. But this wasn't a sightseeing tour alone. The Seattle Department of Transportation's Heather Marks highlighted that work to repair the cracking bridge is on for late November.
We are on schedule and on budget. Exactly as we expected. We're in really good shape. We are just finishing with our 90% design review process. So we're getting closer and closer to that day when we will start actual rehabilitation construction.
SDOT bridge engineer Matt Donahue says the cause of the cracking was the steel inside the concrete.
And although they designed the bridge with post-tensioning strand to the standards of the time, it turned out to be not strong enough for the bridge to carry out its useful life as designed.
Not bad concrete, not seismic activity. It was the steel that failed. Climbing down through a hole in the eastbound direction of the bridge, we had to navigate two ladders to the floor of the concrete box girder that supports the road and distributes the weight above. Once inside, Donahue explained the problem in a little simpler terms.
That post-tensioning steel relaxed over time, stretched out, and changed the way loading moves through the floor of the bridge and started cracking it.
The southern wall of the box girder is covered with handwritten dates and Sharpie marks over the cracks, a mosaic of vertical, horizontal, and diagonal cracks, some even too small to notice until I got up really close. In the middle of the open box girder, you can see the temporary shoring repair, long strands of small steel cables running as far as the eye could see. Workers first added carbon fiber wrapping and then added more post-tensioning steel, pulling those cables tight to help compress and strengthen the bridge. It'll be more carbon fiber wrapping and post-tensioning steel work that will make up the final repair work. A lot of people have been asking why it's taking so long before those final repairs will actually begin. SDOT's Mark says you can't rush a job like this.
Design and testing are extremely important so that we only have to do this once. So we wanted to get it right the first time. And that's why we're making sure that we're hitting all the steps.
And bridge engineer Donahue agreed.
There are many people and many things happening concurrently and have been since the day that we closed the bridge. So I challenge that it's taking so long. It takes as long as it needs to do it correctly, to do it right, because we don't want to find out after we put traffic back on the bridge that we missed something or did something wrong. Nobody wants that.
Cars and buses are expected to return to the bridge in the middle of next year.
Thank you, Chris Sullivan, for that report on the West Seattle Bridge. Now, our producer for the day, Paul Holden, you are a recently former West Seattle resident.
Yes.
What's it been like?
I will tell you that my commute here was insane. It all depended on when I was coming in the day, because if I could take the Lower Spokane Street Bridge, fine, you know, it's great, but then that could get backed up. And man, it's just so frustrating to see I have to go such a short distance,
yeah,
but then you have to go all the way around. And there's just four major choke points along the way to West Seattle. It's like, you're going to get stopped there, you're going to get stopped there. And I just don't know if there's anything else you can do.
No, there wasn't.
Yeah,
that's, it was just, other than a zip line from West Seattle
right
to Seattle.
It's the gondola, I think.
A gondola. I'd love that. And they tried to do the fast foot ferry, too. Did you ever do that one?
No, I honestly didn't take advantage of some other things, mostly just because it was like, with my schedule changing so much around here, because being the utility type of player.
Yes, you are Swiss Army Knife.
It was like, oh, I might be at the station at 5 a.m. I might be there at 1 in the afternoon. So it all depended on when I was coming in. But the most frustrating thing was before they changed the weekend hours, when I would come in for my weekend shifts, I was just past the early thing. So I'd have to go all the way around at 5 in the morning on a Saturday, when it's just like, if I could just take the little bridge and just let go around.
But was that the reason you moved from West Seattle?
Unfortunately, because I love West Seattle. I absolutely.
I hear.
Yeah, I loved my house. Funny enough, my landlord also was completely remodeled the house. I went over it and looked at where it was, and it was completely gutted and changed. But I loved West Seattle. I loved all the stuff over there, but it just simply was so maddening to go not even 10 miles and it take. The worst I had was 2 hours. It took me 2 hours to get from here to home one day.
And unacceptable.
It was just because
you can always move back when the West Seattle Bridge is repaired.
Yeah, and because it's another thing I haven't experienced in Seattle is I moved in the pandemic where things were open and when the West Seattle Bridge was closed. So I do really have a whole new world ahead of me here.
You're itching for that true Seattle experience. I hear you. A little check of weather before we head to break. It's going to be a rainy and breezy Thanksgiving. It looks like the next round of rain just moved up over Seattle and north through Everett, Arlington, Mount Vernon. We do have a flood watch for Whatcom County, but nothing like we saw last week when, you know, homes have been destroyed and businesses, and the cleanup effort is continuing there. But this, we do have a flood watch in effect because we're mindful of what happened up there. Looks like highs today will be around 50 degrees. Right now it's 44 outside the Carter Subaru studio. Coming up, we'll check the local news for you and lots more. Meat alternatives on Thanksgiving? Yeah, we're talking about it. This is Cairo Radio. It is Seattle's Morning News with Dave Ross. Good morning. Really happy to have you here. I'm Colleen O'Brien. While the turkey may be the star of the show on many tables today, plant-based meat alternatives are taking up more and more of the spotlight. CBS's Ben Tracy figures out why more people are eating their veggies.
Did you ever think you'd be making jackfruit tacos for your lunch?
Absolutely not. 4 years ago, I didn't think I would have been vegan. Who knew?
If you were looking for someone to spread the gospel of plant-based eating,
ain't that something how life can change?
Tabitha Brown would have been an unlikely messenger.
What was the kind of food that you grew up on?
Honey, I grew up on everything. I'm from North Carolina. I done ate a little bit of things I should not have eaten. A lot of fried food, a lot of pork and beef, chicken, of course.
So what did you think of vegans?
I honestly thought that's for white people, particularly white women who do yoga and maybe they're in a cult. Honey, that's what Tab thought. It's just a way of thinking.
Tabitha Brown now believes giving up all animal products and going vegan herself is what finally ended her bouts of chronic pain and fatigue.
Hello there.
But she never could have imagined what would also happen.
And boy, did things happen. I could have never dreamt this or thought of this. Let's make some.
She took her daughter's advice and started posting videos on TikTok.
Ooh, baby.
A healthy mix of what to eat.
I'm about to make carrot bacon.
Seasoned with a dash of how to live.
Even if you can't have a good one, don't you dare go messing up nobody else's hen.
The videos have racked up millions of views. She now has a best-selling book, Feeding the Soul, and several corporate partnerships.
My goal is not to judge anyone or force my lifestyle on anyone, My goal is simply to share what it did for me. And representation matters, right? So now when people think of vegan, they also think of a black woman with an afro, okay?
Just 5% of U.S. households are vegan or vegetarian. But these days, there are plenty you might call plant curious. Many omnivores are now swapping out some meat for vegetables.
Make you dance a little bit.
In a diet often called plant-based.
That's really good.
Or even.
It doesn't taste like fruit at all.
Flexitarian.
Plant-based eating is a huge trend.
Marie Moldy is a food trends analyst at Datacential. She says about 25% of Americans now eat a flexitarian diet, and that plant-based is one of the fastest growing terms on restaurant menus, up nearly 3,000% in just the past 4 years. A lot of that is thanks to plant-based meat alternatives. Beyond and Impossible Burgers have proven it's possible to make plants taste like meat. Innovation now spreading throughout the supermarket.
Name any animal protein or animal product, and now there's a plant-based alternative.
71% of consumers have tried a plant-based meat, and more than half say they're willing to pay more for it.
There really are two major reasons why people are turning to plant-based foods. The first is health. And the second reason, and this is a major one, is that plant-based eating is thought to be better for our planet and better for the environment.
Global food production produces a third of all human-caused greenhouse gas emissions, contributing to climate change. And raising animals for food, especially cows, accounts for nearly twice as much planet-warming emissions as plant-based foods.
No one wants to be told what not to do. They want to be given a solution.
Ross Mackay is the co-founder and CEO of Daring Foods, a company creating plant-based chicken products headquartered in California, far from Mackay's native Scotland.
They kicked me out when I stopped eating Scotch beef.
I gave up eating red meat, but I still eat a ton of chicken.
Yeah.
Are you trying to convert people from real chicken to this?
Our mission is, of course, to rethink chicken from the food system. How do we do that? We go after the chicken lover. It's to go after you.
The average American eats about 100 pounds of chicken every year. That's 8 billion chickens, mostly raised in large factory farms. Daring's chicken product is made from soy protein.
This sounds ridiculous to say, but tastes like chicken.
And designed to replicate the texture of the real thing.
That really does have the same texture and taste as chicken. This is almost like skin.
Daring launched its first product into the already crowded alternative chicken market less than 2 years ago. It's now in more than 6,000 retail stores.
So what is the chicken product you feel like you need to come up with to really disrupt this market?
The chicken cutlet is very much the holy grail of chicken. From an innovation perspective, it's the toughest to go after. But we're at the first innings of this. We're barely just getting started.
But Ron Neusbacher wonders, what if we just simply enjoyed
classic hummus,
eating our vegetables?
People want real food, and real food should just be real food and not pretend to be something that it's not.
He's the founder of Shuk, a chain of Israeli street food restaurants in Washington, D.C., where the food, including their famous Shuk burger, is proudly plant-forward.
So the objective is to reconnecting people with the plant world and eating more vegetables and grains and seeds, then why go through all this effort to hide it as something different? Our philosophy is do exactly the opposite, is to actually demonstrate to people experientially that the cauliflower can taste amazing.
Neusbacher says protecting the planet for future generations is his motivation to put plants at the center of our plates.
I have two young kids, and unlike Elon Musk, I don't want my kids or my future grandkids growing up on Mars because we destroyed this planet. There's a misconception that the solution to climate change is buying a Tesla. The solution to climate change starts with reducing the amount of meat that we eat and eating more vegetables.
I've done many of those meat alternatives, and I have to say they're quite tasty. That is Ben Tracy reporting. Coming up on Seattle's Morning News, taking a risk on a love of food.
It was a hobby for a very long time. Yeah. And we're like, this is too much work for it to be a hobby.
Yeah. Rachel Bell, straight ahead. You're listening to Cairo Radio.
You can ring my bell.
8:46, Seattle's Morning News with Dave Ross. Good morning, I'm Colleen O'Brien. There's plenty of ways to cook a turkey, plenty of ways to mess one up, too. And if you want to try something new this Thanksgiving, you should have planned ahead. But there's always the Butterball Hotline. Here's Cairo Radio's Rachel Bell.
This is the 40th year that Butterball has offered up their Turkey Talk line, and it's open now through Christmas Eve.
Right now, we just opened, so we'll get more how much turkey should we have for this many people type of questions. And then as we get like the few days before Thanksgiving, we troubleshoot like, oh no, my turkey's not cooking, or, you know, my oven broke, what should I do?
That's Sam Wolf, a registered dietitian who has manned the Turkey Talk line the last 3 years. And Sam was not who I was expecting. I always imagined a powder-scented room full of grannies on rotary phones, doling out cooking advice between Werther's Originals. But Sam says the 50 Turkey Talkers are a diverse group of chefs and dietitians.
So everyone has to pass the Butterball University. So we do a series of tastings and we cook turkeys different ways. And we just learn all about turkey for a few days in October. I'm happy to say I passed Butterball University. So I'm able to chat with people and help them through their Thanksgiving.
This year, Butterball is stepping into the modern era.
So Butterball is now on TikTok.
A recent Butterball survey found that 69% of people polled plan to make a Thanksgiving recipe that they got off social media. And 73% say they have cooked a meal based on a viral food trend. So Butterball created 4 recipes based on cooking methods that they've seen trending on TikTok.
Get your waffle maker. We're turning stuffing into sandwiches.
The stuffing waffle sandwich. So what we did, we had the stuffing, of course, as the waffle part. We used sweet potatoes that were mashed. We used the leftover turkey, whole cranberry sauce, the gravy, and we put green beans in there, I think, for color.
Can vouch for this trend. I have made a crispy leftover Thanksgiving stuffing waffle the past few Thanksgivings.
It's your favorite flavors in a quick air-fried appetizer.
The Thanksgiving roll-up, so it's turkey breast, and then in the roll-up is sweet potato cranberry sauce. We top it with mushroom soup, and then it has like this Cajun seasoning to it. So you roll that up, and then you actually air fry it. It's like my favorite tool in the kitchen.
They also TikToked a pickle brine turkey and a spicy dry brine turkey. Butterball has definitely tried to keep up with the trends over the last 40 years. In 1985, in response to microwave mania, Turkey Talk Line experts offered a turkey microwave recipe. And in 2013, they hired the very first men to work on the talk line. Because women aren't the only ones in the kitchen.
I can chug the au jus.
Just gangster.
I just kung fu my palate, dude. The flavor jets are turned on.
For the record, Guy Fieri was never hired by Butterball. And now you can text the Turkey Talk line or call it up using Alexa. Sam says they get 15,000 calls on Thanksgiving alone.
I think my personal favorite ones involve thawing. They left it in their trunk of their car, or it's in the garage, or a raccoon got to it in the middle of the night. Is it still okay to prepare? Don't eat it if an animal gets to it.
To find the Butterball Hotline, go to mynorthwest.com/Rachel Bell.
Thank you for that, Rachel. Some of you might be up early getting prepared for the big day of cooking. CBS's Hillary Lane has how to keep everyone happy, healthy, and full.
Howard Baker is on the hunt for the perfect size turkey and knows food safety comes first.
Yeah, we take precautions in that because we do have grandchildren and we want to keep them healthy as well.
This Thanksgiving follows a 16-month salmonella outbreak blamed on recalled turkey products. The outbreak ended in March but serves as a warning for consumers.
Diarrhea, fever, chills. You can end up in the hospital and you can even end up, unfortunately, dying from some of these.
Salmonella and Campylobacter are the two types of bacteria found in the guts of many turkeys. To protect yourself, food experts say wash your hands, but don't wash or rinse the bird.
Recent USDA research found that when individuals wash meat or poultry, they end up spreading germs in much greater levels all around the kitchen, including into food that they may be serving.
Health officials also suggest always using a meat thermometer. Pop-up thermometers that are included with most turkeys are not enough to make sure all the bacteria is cooked out.
So you really want to make sure you cook that turkey to a full 165 degrees throughout the bird, because it's so large, it can cook unevenly. So you need to take that temperature in three places: the thickest part of the breast, the innermost part of the thigh, and the innermost part of the wing.
Experts also warn never partially cook a turkey and then transport it elsewhere to finish cooking. Never stuff a turkey the night before, and never thaw the bird on the counter, thawed in your fridge, or in cold water. Simple steps to keep your family safe this Thanksgiving. Hillary Lane, CBS News, New York.
So we're trying something new. Paul Holden, he's our producer today for Seattle's Morning News. And we've got Brady on the board today. And we're trying something. We've tried the deep fried. We've tried the brine. We've tried the roasting with the constant basting. So this year, thanks to TikTok, I don't know if you've heard of this, but everybody's spatchcocking their turkey.
Yes, I've seen this as a huge, and because I've heard it is the best way to evenly cook everything and get the best skin on the turkey. That's what I've heard. That's the reason to do it.
Yeah, we practiced with a chicken. And for those of you that don't know what spatchcocking means, it basically you cut the bones of the bird in a way that makes it lay flat.
Right,
so
like
it's
a butterfly
still intact.
Kind of.
Yeah, like a butterfly.
Yeah.
So it's still intact, but it lays flat. And that way the juices remain juicy. You put baking powder, salt and pepper on the skin, and that crisps it up real nice. So you have more crispy skin all the way around. Worked beautifully on the chicken. I don't know how it's going to turn out with the turkey. I've heard mixed reviews on social media because everybody picked up on it for TikTok, and some said it worked, some said it failed miserably. So I know this story's getting long, but last night my husband was preparing the turkey. He was spatchcocking the turkey. And it's easy to just cut the bones of a chicken with kitchen shears.
Yeah.
A turkey has more substantial bones. And so imagine my 6-foot-1 husband standing up on a stool to get like above the turkey. And he's basically giving the turkey CPR in order to break the bones in a way that spatchcocks it. And I'm taking video of this because it looks so funny. I had no idea it was going to sound so graphic. You want to hear spatchcocking a turkey?
I would love to. I gotta prepare for this,
okay,
though.
Hopefully it's loud enough. Here we go.
Oh, there we go.
That was like the breastbone. And then here's a little bit more.
Wow.
One more.
Oh.
And you heard me react to that last one going, oh.
Yeah.
Because I just like, it makes my back hurt.
Right.
And then I was like, wait a second. So you're spatchcocking a whole turkey, and yet when I want a foot massage, you're too tired?
Yeah, there you go. He's doing the whole thing, and you're out here working, and is he taking care of everything for food today?
he's a great cook, so yes. What about you? What are you doing for turkey, Paul?
We are going to our friend's house, me and the girlfriend and all of our friends, doing a little Friendsgiving. I usually do some cooking myself. I'm a big cooking fan myself.
What's your dish? What is your brag dish?
You know, I usually like to do something with like a mac and cheese. I like a side. I'm more of a specialty on the side because I've been doing Friendsgiving more than Thanksgiving because my family lives on the other side of the country. So it's better to do Christmas. Thanksgiving, I'm usually working. So I don't usually ever cook a full turkey. And so I've never really done that. But honestly, if I was to go, I think I would do the spatchcock method because I've seen some, you know, I watch a lot of food YouTube and when you pull it out, it looks gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything looks delicious. But I am curious. You mentioned the deep frying. For those, it's one of my favorite things of this year.
It's more of a show.
Yeah.
But it's like, I'm
there's
very skeptical.
There's so much hype over the fried turkey.
I'm skeptical that even spatchcock will make turkey. I think turkey as a bird, as a protein, is garbage.
Yeah,
you know,
it is incredibly mediocre.
It dries out so quick. And Brady, we're going to wrap you into this conversation too because I want to hear your thoughts on turkey. But
I'm with you. Turkey is incredibly overrated. I would like chicken almost every other time. I like mixing it up, but turkey, especially like, you know, out of the oven, when done perfectly, it's great. But even that slightly bit of overdone is like, all right, I'm just got to pour a bunch of gravy
or something.
There's
a reason we slather everything with gravy on Thanksgiving. Yeah. Brady, what are you doing?
Well, unlike Paul, cooking is like Mars to me. I am terrible.
You poor thing.
I've given up on trying.
Oh, you can't give up on trying.
Oh, I'm giving up.
You got a lady or a man in your life? Because you're going to want to learn how to cook if that's...
it's a good way to score brownie points.
Forever at this point.
Now we know why.
Well, yeah, there we go.
It's totally why. And I'm just too addicted to baseball. But for my family Thanksgiving, we aren't having an entire turkey. We each get our own Cornish game hen.
Oh, I've heard of this.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's like a nice little miniature turkey on everyone's plate. So you all get the legs, you all get the thighs. You don't have to fight over it. And it's just, it's a portion that's just, you don't have to go back for seconds, because if you finish your hen, you got to go get another one. And
yeah.
We don't have extra.
Yeah, for sure. Well,
wow.
I'll let you know how it goes, you guys, because... Oh, God, there's the bones cracking.
I didn't know when you... I forgot that's what you were playing. I was like, what is that noise?
Yeah, that's a turkey's bones being spatchcocked. So,
not for the faint of heart, the spatchcocking.
No, that's why my husband's doing it. I could never. I cried when I was 10 years old pulling the neck out of the turkey. I didn't know it was the neck.
Oh,
hey,
no.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Sorry if we spoiled breakfast, but I hope your turkey turns out. This has been Seattle's Morning News with Colleen O'Brien.